This is episode 209, recorded May 27th, 2014.
Greetings, Aquariumaxers.
Hello again.
What have we got lined up?
We have Mick in Carnforth and Bruce from the website, contacted us from the website, Jeremiah in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and then a couple things on our end, so.
Yes. Should we talk about our things first?
Sure.
That's what we usually do, right?
Yep.
Okay. I just wanted to check because I sent an email out to Bruce to see if he was able to respond in time about where he was from, just so we could say where he actually is from.
Well, he doesn't want to be Cyber Bruce. He could be Bruce Wayne.
Maybe. And then he could call up on Google Voice and he could say, "I'm Batman." But he probably doesn't want to be
Well, you know, Bruce Wayne had a stressful life. I'm sure he needed some fish tanks to help him zen out.
That's true. Probably had some in the Bat Cave.
Yeah.
Blind cave fish. Okay. Well,
You know what? I was actually going to say that, but you said it first.
Sorry.
Aren't you so proud of me?
Yes. I'm glad you thought of that. Because maybe it means someday we can actually get blind cave fish.
No. They're ugly.
Okay, well...
A little pink squirmy thing.
I have some really bad news, actually.
Yes, this is a sad... Well, we have bad news and we have good news, although they are unrelated.
Unrelated... Let's say the bad news first.
Yeah, get it out of the way.
Okay. I'm going to say, first of all, that no offense meant to the people who built it back in the ancient days, but the building that I work in has very primitive climate control. And so... It is hard to regulate them. And anyway, to make a long story short, the heat, when I came back from the long weekend, found the heat had been on during this...
We had a three-day weekend this week.
A hot spell.
Yeah.
And I had some fatalities at work. A number of opaiula, which are the Hawaiian red shrimp in a tank there. Not all of them, but some of them. And then some fish too. Some of the,
you said the quarries?
Pygmy quarries. Not all of them, again. But it was quite a mess.
It was very sad.
So I spent a little time
dealing with that today.
Yeah. Using a turkey baster to remove dead opaiula, doing heavy water changes in the fish tank.
Avoid
and stuff
an ammonia
like that.
Spike.
Yeah. So it was very sad.
It's not a very fun thing to greet you when you get into work.
It isn't. And it's been a long time since I've had a big crash like that, so. Oh, sad.
You should tell them the happy news then, and then it will make you feel better.
You can tell them the happy news.
Oh, okay. Well, you found it.
I know. But
it's not actually fish related, but it's still kind of cool.
Yeah.
So we got the morning geckos, and I think we talked about that, right?
We have, yeah. The parthenogenic geckos?
Right. And they started laying eggs in January and still nothing had hatched. And then last night...
We had quite a number of eggs.
Yeah, probably like close to 10 eggs.
But last night...
Russ found the first baby gecko!
And it was from the first clutch of eggs that was laid.
Yep, it was. And it was even from an egg that we thought had been damaged on accident. But it hatched anyways.
And we weren't certain if it had been damaged, but it had fallen.
Yeah.
And we thought, oh, well, I don't know, it's worth a try anyway. And so I put it in a little deli cup and
it was
bang,
an incubator.
4 months, 19 days later, it hatched.
Mm-hmm. And it was very cute and it was not afraid of us at all.
And it's still very cute and still not afraid of us.
Well, yes, I mean, nothing has changed since last night.
No, it's.
But,
seems to be doing well.
We took it out and it was crawling all over our hands and we tried to take a little film of it and it kept jumping right on the camera lens. It was very camera happy.
So I have a video of that.
Yeah, so we'll put that up just for
fun. I didn't
want
to stress it, so I didn't do it too long, but, you know, we had
didn't
to
didn't
want to
stress her.
Deli cup anyway, so it's...
She's a beauty!
She's a beauty! Yeah.
Crikey.
And so it's really fun. It's the first time I've ever successfully had a reptile hatch out of an egg and do well. You know, I remember once, a long time ago, I had a paludarium with some anoles in it, a male and a female, and they would lay eggs all the time, but it was a little bit too damp in the vivarium, so the eggs would swell up by the time I found them. and be dead. Mm-hmm. But one of them got in a perfect spot and hatched, but as I found it, it had been damaged already. Like
somehow.
Either the male had gotten to it, or it had gotten caught in the lid, or something happened. I'm not sure.
So it didn't survive.
But it was already damaged when we found it, so that one didn't survive. But this gecko seems to be doing
the
famously.
The fourth one stayed up.
Yeah, seems to be doing well. So we're glad, and that also means all these other little eggs that are showing up, we're probably going to get some more of those soon, too. So,
yeah,
here we go.
So that's the happy news.
That does make me feel a little better, because it's a fun thing.
Yeah.
Even if it's not exactly a fish. It's a gecko. It's still got scales, and you can still keep it in a glass tank.
There you go.
Kind of close.
Sort of.
Okay.
Matches.
Yeah.
Should we go to our faithful contributors?
Yes, let's do so.
Okay.
Mick's first. Mick in Carnforth, the one and only Carnforth.
He says, keeping the subject of nutrition on the go.
Since we've been talking about that recently.
Mm-hmm. I remember listening to an interview on a marine podcast last year about feeder goldfish and how poor they are as a food source. Apart from being depleted by constant transport, etc., they contain a chemical or enzyme that actually binds up nutrition and can have detrimental long-term health issues when used as a staple food for large predatory fish. Have you seen or heard anything about this? Okay, I have a question.
Yes.
They have a chemical or enzyme and goldfish just always do? Or they, like, do something weird to the breed, the feeder fish? They're, like, GMO fish? What?
No,
what is the chemical enzyme thing?
My understanding is that it's just a natural state of goldfish. I mean, it's possible that it's not, but as far as I know, it's just a natural...
They just happen to...
They produce this enzyme, which, by the way, is called thiaminase.
That sounds sort of familiar.
Yeah, from that you might guess that it reacts with thiamine, and you know, it breaks it down. And thiamine is one of the
thiamine.
B vitamins, yeah.
So if you eat too many goldfish, you lose B vitamins.
You could get a B vitamin deficiency.
So goldfish are like sugar.
Sort of. I guess sugar, like
sugar,
processed sugar depletes.
Messes up your
B vitamins
in people.
Yeah. But
so goldfish are junk food.
In a very real sense, they are. It's a good point that Mick made there and a good point you just made there. So there are a couple of things. There's the fact that they contain this thiaminase and can cause a deficiency if fed, you know, just long-term as a staple diet. Then there's the fact that they're nutritionally depleted because of the stresses of transport and so on. But there are other things too. I mean, they're overcrowded typically in stores. Outrageously, grossly overcrowded. When they're sold as feeders.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so bad when they're sold as pets, typically, but they are overcrowded. The water quality has consequently got to be kind of poor, even with the high filtration they usually use. You see a lot of dead fish in the water, so I'm sure you're getting some ammonia spikes. Even though the pet stores typically try to remove them quickly when they find them dead, it's
hard to keep up.
Say you got 20 dead in a 55-gallon tank every day, even if they're removing them.
That's a lot.
You know, and it probably varies from tank to tank and situation to situation, but that's not unusual to go into a pet store and find a tank with 300 goldfish in it and 20 of them are dead. Not at all unusual when they're used as feeders. And disease transmission is probably, you know, pretty common when you've got that many fish packed together. Not just the goldfish to the goldfish, but the goldfish to the predatory fish.
Mm-hmm.
It's very likely that could cause an issue. And a lot of people recommend, if you're going to use those goldfish as feeder fish, that you quarantine them first. And you kind of load them
nasty up
with healthy food too, which is not a bad idea. I mean, if you're going to feed goldfish, that would be the way to do it. But I would say there's the thiaminase issue to worry about. And especially if you're using larger goldfish or they've been around a while, I would think mycobacterium could be an issue.
That would be bad.
Because goldfish are sensitive to it. And if you got them in a big fat tank with low water quality, they're going to be immunocompromised. And that's when mycobacterium kicks in. And a larger goldfish would be around long enough that it could be, you know, symptomatic for the disease. Yeah, a really young goldfish that's only a couple of weeks old probably doesn't have enough time to build it up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or a couple months old even, because I don't think they sell them at a couple of weeks old. But anyway, and one of the main routes of infection of fish with mycobacterium is by ingestion. They ingest pieces of dead fish, or they ingest feces, that contain mycobacteria in it. So I would say that you get a mycobacterium infected fish and you give it to an arowana or an Oscar or something, and you know that you're really giving it a load, packing a punch of pathogenic bacteria.
Right.
So, yeah. So these are all really good reasons to use commercial diets for predatory fish instead, I think.
Or breed your own goldfish, so you know where they've been.
Well.
But I mean, even then, it would just be every once in a while.
Yeah, if you were breeding goldfish, I guess.
If you have goldfish out in a pond that happen to breed sometimes, and you want to catch some sometimes, anyways, just to. Then I don't know. Do goldfish do that, or do you have to really try to get goldfish to breed?
If you put a few goldfish in a big pond with plants and stuff, they'll probably breed.
Okay.
They tend to, but. There's, remember, like, the ones that the people released up in the pond in Olympus Park?
Oh, right, yeah.
And they bred up there, and they weren't even that old or anything. But here's the thing. There are some species of fish that won't eat non-living food. They just don't recognize it as food. There's not that many. I mean, Oscars, for example, arowanas, they'll take pellets.
Oscars will.
No problem, yeah. And plenty of others that people consider predatory fish. They are predatory fish in the wild, but...
What about... I don't know if this counts as aquatic, but like red-eared sliders, like turtles and stuff, people often buy feeder goldfish for them. Is that a problem?
My understanding is that this thiaminase issue applies to reptiles, too. In fact, I first read about it in a book written by a veterinarian, and he was talking about reptiles at the time. And this was years and years and years ago, like, I don't know, 30 years ago or something.
So they've known about this for a long time.
Yeah.
They just still sell them. Nobody told the pet store.
Because, you know, it's goldfish per se. You imagine the goldfish is perfectly healthy. An occasional goldfish in the diet of an Oscar or something is not a bad thing. If it's, you know, perfectly healthy.
Right.
But that's a big if. And it's a big occasional, too. So, I would say, though, if someone's going to raise feeders, I mean, if someone needs to use feeder fish, like they have pike live bears or something that really don't eat pelleted food, they pretty much need live food, that they should raise their own, and I would do live bears instead of goldfish.
Yeah, I was actually just wondering if you could do guppies or something.
Yeah, you can.
Not, I mean, you probably wouldn't want fancy guppies
but
that,
you can use common guppies.
The common guppies.
But you'd want healthy stock, too, with that. Or you could use platies or, you know, different things. People do. And they work better, I guess. I don't know. There are a number of fish that are sold out there that have this same thiaminase issue. I don't think live bears do, but, you know, I could be wrong.
What other ones do?
It seems like minnows do. Minnows. Like the fathead minnows. That around here, they often sell them as rosy reds or rosy red feeders or rosies. And I don't know why they call them that because I've never seen a rosy red one.
But you are colorblind.
I am, but I don't think you've seen a rosy red one either.
Point them out to me and I'll tell you if they're red.
Okay. They look more like goldfish, pale goldfish color to me, which is not red.
Well, that's true.
You get red on goldfish, but, you know, just
you get
the normal.
Very dark orange on goldfish. You don't get
even
red.
Even pondy?
Yeah, well...
And what about Joaquins and Gekines? I've seen real red on goldfish. Red caporondas?
I've seen very, very, very dark orange.
Okay, well, there's been some that I pointed to and you said, no, that's red.
Well, I'll have to see them again.
But it's not that
I think
common.
Sometimes I kind of humor your colorblindedness, too.
Oh, you shouldn't do that. You've got to give me the, give it to me straight. Okay, let's move on with Mick's next comment there. Okay. Thank you, Mick. Excellent point to bring up.
He says, as a side note on organic grown greens, etc., I have a large tub of dandelions and Plantago minor, which I have in our garden to provide me with a regular source of greens for our tortoise and bearded dragon. They are watered in part with the wastewater that I get from the water changes on my aquariums.
I love that.
I love that too. You know what? I want a shirt someday that says dandelions are flowers too. I think they're more normal over in Europe, aren't they? They're not so much of a weed.
I can't comment on that. I don't know.
Isn't that where they're actually from, dandelions?
I believe so.
Europe. So they probably don't
they
take everything over like they do here.
Someplace in Europe. I'm not sure where in Europe.
Most people over here hate them, and it makes me sad, because they're like the first color that comes up in the spring, and I love them.
I remember this plant, Plantago minor. You'll often see it in lawns.
Oh, we had that in the... We're looking at a picture right now. We had this in the playground of my elementary school.
Yeah. I remember
when we
this.
Used to, like, wrap the stem around the little pod head thing and pop it off like a little gun.
Yeah, we used to do that, too.
Like a little plant shooter thing.
Yeah, we used to do that, too. Well, they had a lot in Washington, and you do see it here, but not as much as you did in Washington, probably because of the rainfall. But, yeah, that's a great idea. It's kind of... It's a sustainable way to grow things, you know? You're using the nutrients from your fish, and you're giving your reptiles food, and
that's
fun.
It's really fun to watch tortoises and bearded dragons eat.
Yes.
They just look so happy about it.
I love watching reptiles eat plants. I love watching reptiles eat anything. It's really funny. I love to watch geckos lick up their crested gecko diet, which, you know, whatever. Anyway.
Well, it smells good.
It's funny.
It smells like bananas.
It does. I just think it's fun to watch reptiles eat.
Yeah, it is.
In general. It's fun to watch any creature eat, really.
Mm-hmm.
But
except,
I like
cat food.
I like watching our golden horde
of
gold
barbs. That's
not
quite so fun, because you just know they're like, really, you're feeding this to me again?
Well, yeah. But our fish, our gold barbs, it's fun to watch them feed.
They're very
they're so
happy
excited
when they're
about
eating.
It. I love that. Okay. So, his next thing here.
Oh, yes. He says, I remember, this is about axolotls. We've been talking about that on and off, too. I remember Russ mentioning recently that axies were around $40 for juveniles in shops there, which is here in the U.S. They average around 25 pounds here, which I think is a similar price with currency conversion.
Oh, okay. Thanks for letting us know that.
Oh, and he says, thanks for mentioning our Fangs and Fins Facebook page again. I think I saw Carlos had liked us, which is great. So, yay Carlos.
Thanks, Carlos. Mm-hmm. Anybody else who would like to, go ahead and do it.
Yep.
Right now, Fangs and Fins, Facebook. That's almost the alliteration award right there. Fangs and Fins, Facebook.
That's pretty good.
Fantastic.
Become a fan of the Fangs and Fins Facebook page. How about
that? Yeah, there you go. All right. So, thank you,
Mick. Thanks, Mick.
And guess what's coming in the mail?
Mint cake!
This week, probably.
That's exciting.
It is.
Okay. Bruce. Bruce Wayne. Cyber Bruce. Batman. Okay, he says, just wondering what size vase you purchased. He's talking about our Opayula container.
Right.
He says, I'm looking to buy the 25-inch IKEA vase to try something decorative. I currently have 4 nano aquariums, 8, 6, 5, and 2.5 gallons. The filtration for this vase will be a challenge, trying to hide filter tubes, heater, light cords, etc. I will be drilling a large hole in the bottom to bulkhead in a 1.5-inch black ABS tube.
Mm-hmm.
Remind me what ABS is.
ABS is like the, well, it's not always black, but it's usually the black plastic tubes that, it's a very strong plastic. It's used for plumbing tubing.
Okay, so it doesn't stand for anti-lock brake system in your fish tank.
No.
No speeding fish. Love the show, and thanks for the vase idea. Much cheaper than any aquarium of the same gallons.
Okay, well, let's weigh in on the vase size.
Mm-hmm.
We
measured it.
Measured it just a few minutes ago in preparation for this.
Just for you.
Yep. Just for Bruce, the height of the vase that we have is 18 inches, or very near that. The diameter of the vase at the top, exterior diameter,
10 inches.
Is about 10 inches. I think it's a little under that, but very close to 10 inches. And then the thickness of the glass is just under 1/4 inch.
Mm-hmm.
So
at the bottom of the vase is it tapers, so
it tapers,
it's more narrow than
like
than
a
the
tumbler
top, but the top is 10 inches.
I didn't measure the bottom, but I figure it must be,
it's probably like,
I don't know, between
six.
six and eight somewhere
yeah.
in there. So hopefully that helps. You ought to be able to locate the same one if that's the one you want. But oh no, you're going to get the larger one, 25 inches.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be something. The one we have is, it holds about 3 gallons of water.
Which works fine for the Opayula.
Yeah, it's very fine for the Opayula. I just removed about 60 Opayula from it, and I still have loads of them. I didn't do anything bad with them. I just sold them, so don't worry.
No, they're in timeout.
We didn't, like, eat
them. They were naughty.
I've actually had people ask me if I eat them.
Yeah, and which is kind of weird, because they're like 1/4 inch long.
They're very tiny, but... I think some of them get close to half an inch.
I don't know how you would even... I mean, I don't want to, but...
No, but I've actually heard of people in Hawaii doing it, but I never tried.
Just seems like you'd need so many even for a mouthful. It's like, let's go eat some krill. Great,
well,
I'll get out the baleen.
People,
you know?
Have actually eaten brine shrimp from the Great Salt Lake, too.
I know,
and that
but
would
people
be even
are
harder
nuts.
To do, because they're even smaller, but... Well, I guess
actually... No, I think some of the brine shrimp get bigger than some of the opayula. They're about
true.
The same.
Well, I've seen...
Really
the
big
biggest,
brine shrimp and really big opayula. So.
The biggest opayula I've seen is shorter, you know, than the largest brine shrimp I've seen from the Great Salt Lake. But I think the mass of the opayula is bigger because they're thicker around. Instead of just a long string with legs, they're more shrimp bulk, you know, more body mass. Anyway, hopefully that helps with sizing things. Yeah, I can see what you mean about the filtration and the cords and everything. You know, with round columnar tanks, sometimes I've put a background just... You can still put a background on it, and you don't always want to do that with a vase, and it depends on how you want to display it, but you can put something in the back and then put all the cords and everything behind it. Of course, that doesn't help with the heater or the filter tubes, really. But we'd love to see what you decide to do once you put the bulkhead in and
send us some
how
pictures.
You hook that up in terms of filtration and stuff. Yeah, we'd love to see some pictures. And thanks for contributing today.
Okay, so next we have Jeremiah from Michigan, Grand Rapids, Michigan. And he says, "Hi, I just started listening to the show. I have a 2.5 gallon with a sponge filter. Currently, it has 4 or so freshwater shrimp that I had to separate from my guppies. I'm not sure 100% what kind they are because the fish store sold them only as shrimp. But I believe they're wild-type neos. Anyway, I'm wondering what plants would be a good idea on a fluorite substrate in such a small setup."
Okay. Well, welcome to the show as an aquariumaxer, Jeremiah. Well, let's see. You know, it's funny, because in Hawaii, we would get wild-type neos, because they're feral there, breeding populations in the waterways there in Hawaii, because people release them. Unfortunately, not the red ones, they're just the wild types, but still. You could buy them for like 10 for a dollar, or 20 for a dollar, or something ridiculous, it was really cheap. And they just sold them as opai, which means shrimp in Hawaiian. Opaiula means like red shrimp.
Red shrimp.
But
that's funny,
anyway.
Huh?
Yeah, it's funny. So... hopefully they are. They might just be, they might be grass shrimp or something. If you have a picture, and you could send them to me, I could probably give you a pretty good idea of whether they're wild type Neocaridina or they're glass shrimp or something. Maybe you already know the difference between those two, but you could send a picture and I could probably help you out. Anyway, your question was about plants on a fluorite substrate in a small setup, a 2.5 gallon. So I'm going to assume, because you said you have a sponge filter in there, that you're not doing carbon supplementation, like you're not adding do-it-yourself CO2 or anything like that. I guess you might be adding liquid carbon supplementation like Flourish Excel or something, but anyway, let's assume that you're not for now, because with a sponge filter, you're probably not doing DIY CO2, because that would be an inefficient means of doing it. So I'm assuming you're not doing that. Okay. That in mind, here are some plant choices. You could do some of the smaller Anubias Bartieri Nana cultivars. Some of those Anubias stay really small.
Mm-hmm.
And they would do well in there. They don't need carbon supplementation because they get enough from the dissolved carbon in the water. Dissolved carbon dioxide in the water. They grow slowly. They would do great in there, I think. It kind of depends also on your light and your bioload. Of course, your bioload's low right now with just a few shrimp in there, but they do well with shrimp. Shrimp do well with them. That'd be a good idea. They look nice, too. You could do lace or windelove Java fern, because it tends to stay smaller than some of the other, you know, like the natural type. You could probably also do needle leaf. I've done needle leaf in small tanks. It works fairly well. Those look really nice, you know, in low light. They tend to do really well, and shrimp love them also. You could do just about any aquatic moss. Now, aquatic mosses tend to do better in terms of they grow more quickly with CO2 supplementation, but most of them do fine without it, as long as your temperature is not too high. And they look really cool. And shrimp love moss, but they don't typically damage moss. They just nibble on it and help keep it clean. So that would be a good one. And mosses are just fun. And they look good in a small tank. And another one, Dwarf Sagittaria subulata, or Dwarf Sag, as it is often known. That sounds bad. That sounds like a, you know.
The Hobbit's pants are falling down. Thorin's pants are falling down.
Well, that kind of works. I was thinking, like, you know, Gimli needs to go on a diet.
Oh, well, but, yeah.
You know, something like that. Anyway, it does well because it only grows typically a couple of inches, maybe 3 inches tall, and it'll make a nice carpet, and it's a bright, light green color. And it does well as long as you have decent light on there, and shrimp love to crawl around in that stuff, too. So those are some ideas. There are a number of stem plants that would be okay, but you'd have to trim them mercilessly, like twice a week.
But you so it would be a lot of maintenance.
Yeah, it would be more maintenance, because all these other ones grow relatively slowly compared to stem plants. You know, stem plants can grow like an inch a day, so they're doing well.
But speaking of,
mm-hmm.
I forgot to tell you, you have a flower, a new flower in your terrarium for the geckos. Oh, is it
the Opiskia?
The red one?
That little red, fluffy, fuzzy plant.
Oh, you already saw it? I was going to surprise you.
Oh, no, I haven't. I've only seen the bud. I haven't seen the flower
yet.
Oh,
no, it's totally open today.
So I need to see the flower, yeah. So, that would be cool. I've been excited to see
it. It's facing the wrong way. It's facing the back of the tank, so you can't really see the flower.
But we can move it, take a picture of it. So, you know, you could put some ceratophyllum in there or something and just trim it to death all the time. Or even some naha, some guppy grass.
Mm-hmm.
I've done that in small tanks, and I noticed that, like, years ago, when we lived back in Orem, and I had the desktop betta with Captain Finn.
Oh, yes.
And I had some, let's see, then I moved that one into the 2.5. But before I did that, at some point I had some ghost shrimp breeding in there. And it was just a 1.25-gallon tank. And I had a lot of light on it, like crazy, like 10 watts of compact fluorescent light on it. Kind of a lot for such a small tank, but I put just guppy grass, or it's called N-A-J-A-S. I pronounce it Nahas, but I think other people pronounce it other ways. Nahas graminea. And it's, it went nuts in there. So if I didn't cut it back like every week or twice a week, I just, poof, it was just this puff of green. And I'd have to reach in and take it out by the handful. But the shrimp, the ghost shrimp, these were not cherry shrimp. They were ghost shrimp, and they would breed in there because there were so many plants. They're a little harder to breed. But I would get babies that would survive in there.
Like not all a lot the green of babies, but hiding places, I guess.
Yeah. But it's a really easy plant to grow, but you just have to cut it. And that's true with almost any stem plant you would put in there. If it would grow in there and be happy in there, it would grow too fast for you to, you know, get lazy about pruning it. But if you did, you could put a lot of different things in there. So those are a couple of ideas. Hopefully that helps. If you do decide to do carbon supplementation like Flourish Excel or something like that, there are some other ideas. Lots, actually. But one that I would suggest, if your temperature's not too high in that tank again, kind of like along the lines of mosses, would be to put some liverworts in there.
Oh.
Not to be confused with liverwurst.
That would be messy.
But like Pellia. Monocelium tenarum, I believe is the name, unless they've changed it lately, is the kind of Pellia I'm thinking of. It does really well with shrimp, looks really nice if it's got decent light and it's got carbon supplementation, does well in a small tank, fun stuff. And there are some other closely related kinds that you can get too. Like, there's one that has a crazy sounding German name like Subwassertang or something like that. And it's very similar to Pellia, but kind of a different growth habit and so on. So if you want to look into that, if you're going to do some carbon supplementation, you have some other possibilities as well. Hopefully that gives you some ideas. And I think we're just about done for the week.
I think so.
So ladies and gentlemen,
may the fish
be with you.